want to present an idea from this coming week's Sedra, Vayishlach. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch of Shlomo Gansfried has a sefer that he wrote on Chumash. It's called Apirion. In that sefer, in this coming week's Sedra, he says the following, and I want to enlarge on the idea that he brings out, that we find this in many places, and it's a foundation in how a person has to deal with hishtadlus and bitachon. He says like this, the pasuk says, Im yavo Esav el hamachane ho'achas vihikahu, v'hoyo hamachane hanishar v'thleitah. Yaakov divides his camp into two. He says that Esav will come on the first camp and destroy it, smite it. Then the second one will be Lifleta, it'll be a reserve, it'll be saved. The obvious question is, how did Yaakov Avinu know that if one is going to be destroyed, the other one's going to be saved? Maybe both will be destroyed. So what was this idea? Im yavo Esav el hamachane ho'achas v'yikol. Says the Apirion, the word ho'achas with a hey, ho'achas, refers to the fact that the first one would be the stronger one. That would be the one that would face Esav first, the stronger half of his camp. If Esav would overpower that first half of the camp, then it will become evident to everyone that left that, naturally speaking, there's no way that they can withstand the attack of Esav on the second one. And once they came to that realization that naturally it would be impossible for them to win, then they would have siyata dishmaya, they'd have tremendous heavenly help, and they would overcome Esav. That's what he says. In other words, there comes a time when a person realizes that he can't do it on his own. At that point, the Rabbanu Shel Olam gives him tremendous siyata d'shmaya. It's only when a person thinks he can do it on his own that God says, fine, so do it on your own. We find a similar idea in the name of Rabbi Yeruchim Lubavitch, the Mashgiach of Mir, about 100 years ago. The Mir Mashgiach said the following. The Gemara says that before Mashiach comes, many things that people relied on or thought they could rely on will be shown to be totally bankrupt. Wisdom, secular wisdom, and justice, and truth, and all the things that people thought they could rely on, they'll see that you can't. And the end, bottom line, will be the Ein Lanu Lehishayin Ela Avinu Shebashamayim. People will realize, this is the way he learns it, that they can't rely on anything but the Rabbanu Shel Olam. All the things they put their trust in are shattered in their eyes. Right? All the institutions of justice and democracy and all the things, or socialism, or all the isms that people put their trust in, will be shattered. And Ein Lanu Lehishayin Ela Avinu Shebashamayim. We have no one to rely on except HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then Mashiach will come. Because when people think they can rely on other things, then the Rabbanu Shel Olam says, so rely on them. But if you understand that you can only rely on the Rabbanu Shel Olam, then you get Siyata Dishmai. With that, I want to explain another parasha. It has to do with Shemitah. The Torah says, V'chisomru manochal bashana hashminis. If you will say, what are we going to eat in the eighth year? Hein lo nizra v'lo nesof es tvoseinu. We haven't planted anything. We therefore can't gather in anything. What are we going to eat? So God says, I will give you a bracha in the sixth year, and it will produce for 3 years. The sixth, the seventh, until you have time to gather in your crops in the eighth year, you'll have what to eat for those 3 years. So the Mefarshim say, that's if you ask. What if you don't ask any questions? What if you don't ask any questions? You don't ask, what are we going to eat? Right? So then the Svarno says you get a bigger bracha or whatever. You won't have to have 3 years tefuah in the sixth year. You'll have 1 year's tefuah and then it'll last you for 3 years. But based on this idea, I think you can say something completely different. If you don't ask the question, you won't get a bracha. Why? Because if you don't ask the question, you're oblivious to the problem. You don't think there's a problem. That means that doesn't necessarily mean you have tremendous faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It means you're oblivious to the fact that there's a problem. So you're not asking any questions, and you consider that somehow, naturally, things are going to work out. Then they won't work out. Then enochinam, you have a problem. But if you realize, you ask the question, you say, look, naturally speaking, we're not going to have anything to eat in the eighth year. And so you realize that you can't rely on nature anymore. Naturally speaking, if you keep Shemitah, there's not going to be anything to eat. At that point, you really have dependence on Hashem, because you're going to keep Shemitah anyway, realizing that naturally, there's nothing that's going to happen. In that scenario, you get a bracha. You get a bracha when you realize that you can't do it on your own. But if you don't realize that, right, you don't think there's any problem, then you don't get any bracha. Based on this, we can explain, this is very similar to what the Telzer Rosh Hashiva says in Shirei Das, but not exactly. Can explain the following. Chazal say, Tzadikim omrim ma'at v'osim harbe. The nature of a tzaddik is to say little and do a lot. And the nature of a rasha is to promise and say a lot and do nothing. Or do very little. What's the idea? Could be the idea is the following. A tzaddik understands that he can't control this world in any way. Not physically, not spiritually. Even when it comes to going against his own yetzer hara, he needs heavenly help. Because the Gemara says, b'chol yom v'yom, yitzro shel adam misgaber alav, every day the yetzer hara gets stronger and stronger, and mischadesh alav, and it gets new tactics, the ilmole HaKadosh Baruch Hu ozro, and if God would not help him, eino yachalom, you can't overcome the yetzer hara without heavenly help. And even though Chazal say, Hakol bidei shamayim chutz mi yira shamayim, everything's in the hands of heaven, except for yira shamayim, right? That means that you have to make the first attempt. But ultimately, if you'll be successful or not, is up to the Rebbeinu Shalom. You have to put in your effort. God is the one who makes you succeed, even in spiritual things, not only in physical things. So, if that's the case, so the tzaddik understands, and with that you can understand also how we can daven for Yirah Shamayim and spiritual things. L'chora, those things are in our hands, they're not in the hands of God, but they are. Ultimately, they're in the hands of God. The beginning, we have to make the initial attempt. But ultimately, if we're going to be successful, even in spiritual things, depends on God's help. So a tzaddik understands that. So he never promises a lot in anything. Not in things that involve spiritual things, and surely not in things that involve physical things. Because he knows that the most he can do is put in the effort. He can't guarantee results. So he promises a little, but because he anticipates, because he understands that he's not capable of doing it, and he needs God's help, he gets God's help. The Rasha, on the other hand, thinks he can do it on his own. And therefore he promises a lot. He doesn't realize that he can't do it on his own. So I'm in control, I can do what I want. And therefore he doesn't get that divine help, and therefore he's not successful. With that you can understand what the Shirei Das explains according to his line of reasoning, but it fits with our idea too. It says in the future, God is going to take the Satan, the Yetzer Hara, and shech them. It means he's going to reach his goal, he reached his purpose, finishing his mission, right, in the future. Like an animal reaches its goal when it gets shechted, now it can be used for its purpose. So that's what's going to happen to the Satan. And in front of the tzaddikim and in front of the rishoyim, the tzaddikim are going to be crying because the Yetzer Hara is going to appear to them like a big mountain. And they're going to say, how did we conquer this big mountain? And they're going to be crying. And the Rishayim are also going to be crying. But the Yetzer Hara is going to appear to them like a hare. And they're going to cry, how did we not conquer this hare? Now, based on what we said, the idea is the following. The Tzaddik always saw his Yetzer Hara as a mountain, something that is insurmountable according to natural means. You need God to help you. But he conquered it because of that. The Rasha always saw the Yetzer Hara as just a little hare. It's easy. You can overcome anything. And therefore, he never was successful. Based on this, you can understand also why Yaakov Avinu, he had three lines of attack, or three lines of defense against Esau. First, he tried pius. He tried to appease him. And it's interesting, the word appease and pius, probably the same word. And then he readied himself to do battle, and then he davened. Why did he leave the davening to the end? Why did he daven first? Daven first that my appeasement and my plans for war should be successful. Why did he leave the davening for the end? I think basically to bring out this point. Now, after he tried his appeasement, and after he readied that, and he readied his battle plans, he realized with all of that, I can't be successful unless I have God's help. So after all of that is finished, you still need to daven. It's not that I need to daven that those things should be successful. I need to daven because those things can never do it on its own. You always need, in the end, God's help, no matter what you do. No matter how much you can do that's successful, you're never going to be successful unless you have Siyata Dishmaya. And that is how a person has to look at his ishtadlus altogether. You know, every area, whether it's physical or spiritual, a person has to put in his effort. But he has to realize that ultimately, if he's going to be successful, depends on the Rabbanu Shalom. And when you realize that you can never be successful with your own efforts alone, and you need the Rabbanu Shalom, when you understand you need him, then he's there. If you think you don't need him, then he's not necessarily there for you. And that's why, after Yaakov Avinu vanquishes the angel in this week's Sedra that he fought with, he asks him for a bracha. Same idea. I vanquished you. I'm now, what's it called, Yisrael. I'm the one who fought with man and angel and was successful. But ultimately, it's the Rabbanu Shalom who made me successful. And without his help, all my successes are meaningless. And therefore, give me a bracha. Give me a bracha that the Rabbanu Shalom should help me. That's why we say in Shemoneh Esrei, Hakel Yeshuasenu Ve'ezrasenu Sela. God is our salvation and our help. The Chaorah should be in the opposite order. God first is our help, and if he helps us enough, then he's our salvation. But if he's already your salvation, what do you need his help for? But the answer is, even after God is your salvation, and you're in a great, what's it called, matzav, you're in a situation, you're in a state of salvation, you still need God's help. It doesn't end there. You constantly need God's help even to survive, even to continue. Not just when there's trouble, then you need God to help you. Even in the things that appear to be that you can take care of naturally, you still need God's help. It could be for that reason we preface Shemoneh Esrei with the bracha of Goal Yisrael. Samchinen Geula L'Tfila. Right, you first speak about the redemption from Egypt, and then you daven. One of the ideas could be that even after redemption, when things are okay now, and now it seems like things will just glide along, right? No, now you need a daven. Even when things appear to be under control, you still need the Rabbanu Shalom's help. Still need to daven. This concept can be used to explain what appears to be a contradiction between the following two commentaries. Chazal say in the beginning of the Sedra that when Yaakov Avinu sent Malachim, he sent angels or emissaries to test the waters with Esav, see what was doing. So Esav knew that he was coming back. He confronted Esav, so he did something wrong. It wasn't the right thing to do. You don't force confrontation. You try to avoid confrontation. And the Medrash quotes the following pasuk from Mishlei. The pasuk says, Ma'achez ba'ozne kelev, mecharcher al riv lolo. I think that's pretty close to the pasuk. It may not be the word for word. But the pasuk says, a person who gets involved in a fight that's not his, he sticks his nose into somebody else's fight, is like a person who pulls a dog's ears. Meaning, if you don't look for trouble, don't pull the dog's ears, don't confront the dog. Tiptoe around him, leave the dog alone. Don't look to start up. If you nix into a fight that's not yours, you're looking for trouble. Don't look for trouble in this world. Avoid it. So when Yaakov Avinu sent emissaries to Esav, he's looking for trouble. Why don't you avoid the confrontation, tiptoe back into Eretz Yisrael? Esav doesn't have to know you're back. Don't look to confront him. That's a medrash. Later on, we find the following scenario, which you're all familiar with, but from a different perspective. I'm going to tell you a new perspective that maybe you haven't heard of. Yaakov Avinu sets his family safely on the other side of a brook, Mavre Yabok. And next thing we know, Yaakov is back on the first side of the brook, alone. Leaves his family, and he's alone. So you're familiar with the Rashi, based on the Gemara, that Yaakov Avinu forgot some earthenware mugs, pitchers, and he went back to get them. Therefore he was alone, and then the angel of Esav attacks him, and he fights with him all night, and in the end he gets wounded, but he overcomes the angel, gets his bracha, and his name is changed to Yisrael. That's how Rashi and the Gemara learn. The Rashbam has a different, completely different perspective on what's going on here. He says the following. He says that Yaakov Avinu understood that Esav has only a bone of contention with him, not his family. So basically his family is safe. And Yaakov therefore left his family in relative safety, and he ran away. And he tried to run away and not confront Esav. That's why he was alone. That's why he was on the other side of the brook. He was running away. And God sent not the son. He sent Yaakov Avinu's guardian angel, Michael, to prevent him from running away and force him to confront Esav. Now, on the surface, those two ideas seem to be conflicting. Because the Medrash says Yaakov should have avoided Esav and not confronted him, and he's held guilty for confronting him, like pulling a dog's ears. And the Rashbam says that when he tried to avoid confronting him, tried to run away, he was forced by his own angel to confront Esav. So which is it? Are you supposed to confront, or are you supposed to avoid? So the simple idea, but we'll explain it based on what we said until now, I think the simple answer is that there's no conflict here. There's no argument. They're both true. A person should avoid problems. Don't look for problems in this world. Don't look for confrontation. Avoid it. Okay? Circumvent it. Not supposed to look for problems. One of the reasons is, we'll see another reason, based on what we're talking about, but one reason is that God will give you as much problems as you need in this world. You don't have to look for them. Okay? That is not a cynical old man speaking. That's the fact. That is the fact of life. Okay? The Rabbanu Shel Olam, this is a world of issues, problems, challenges. That's a better word, challenges. That's what the world is all about, facing challenges and growing. So you're not going to have a world which doesn't have any challenges in this world. It doesn't exist. And if God presents you with the challenges, He'll present you with the kinds of challenges that you can handle. But if you look for them, you may find ones that you can't handle. So therefore, don't look for problems. But once the challenge is there, once the problem is there, you can't run away from it. You have to face it. You have to solve it. Solving can be many ways. Solving a problem, let's say a person has a problem at work. He has a job, and he has a problem. He has a problem with a coworker, with his boss, doesn't like the work or whatever. There's three ways of solving that problem. One way is to change the situation. Go to the boss, convince him to change, whatever, change the conditions, whatever it may be. Change the conditions, solve the problem. Second, learn how to live with it. The conditions aren't going to change, but I have to change. I'll change and that'll solve the problem. That's the second way. Third way is get out of this situation. It's not going to change. I'm not going to change. And therefore, it's not something that I can change. It's not something that I can have changed. And therefore, the solution is find a different scenario. Get another job. Those are three legitimate kinds of solutions. The fourth possibility is run away from the job. Don't make any attempt. Right? Just try to find another job. That's not a solution. That's running away from the problem. Sometimes solving the problem is get a new job. Quit this job, but you're not running away. You've come to the realization that there's no other answer. Namela, that's the solution. But if you haven't determined any kind of solutions, you just say, well, the easiest thing for me to do is to find another situation. That's running away from a problem that you can't, that you shouldn't do. Because what's going to happen is you'll find the same problem somewhere else and you won't never be able to face them and never be able to solve them. So it's wrong to run away. Now, even a marriage, divorce is a solution sometimes. But running away from the situation is not. That's not a solution. So that's one way of understanding it, but a little bit deeper based on what we said is the following. When a person runs away from a problem, he gets the impression that he can control what kind of problems come to him. He's in control. And if I run away, it'll be okay. That, what's it called, is not acceptable because you're not going to have help from the Rabbanu Shlomo in that kind of situation. Because you think that your running away is going to solve your problem. But if you, what's it called? So to run away from a problem, not. But to avoid problems means that you understand that if you get involved in a problem, you may not be able to handle it. And therefore, you avoid the problem. That's a recognition that you can't do everything. That you need the Rabbanu Shalom. And therefore, don't look for trouble. So, when you're not looking for trouble, you're admitting that if I get into trouble, I may not be able to control the situation. I need God's help. Then you'll get God's help for avoiding problems. But once you have the problem, and you think you can run away, then you think that you can control. I can just find a new situation. I don't need God anymore. I just have to run away. Then already you're not going to get Siyata Dishmaya. Then it's going to be a big problem. So therefore, bottom line in all of this, I think we've proved the point through many different places, specifically from this Sedra, is that a person has to face this world with the following Hashgatha. I have to make my Hishtadlus. Okay, I have to do what seems to be positive, effective, both in the physical realm and the spiritual realm. But I should always realize that in any case, my efforts are never going to be that effective that they can be effective on their own. Whatever I do will be successful and effective only if the Rabbanu Shlomo helps me. And if I understand that, I understand that I can't do it on my own. I'm aware that I can't do it on my own, right? Then the Rabbanu Shalom will be there to save me. If I think I can do it on my own, then the Rabbanu Shalom will not give me that Siyata Dishmaya Mamela. I won't be successful. Because without the Rabbanu Shalom, I can't be successful. And if I don't think I need him, then he won't be there. So with all the Hishtadlis that a person makes, he should realize that even if he makes the greatest Hishtadlis, it's never going to be successful without the Rabbanu Shalom's help. Not in physical things, not in spiritual things. And if you understand that, that ultimately you can't rely on anything, not that you do or other people do, or that's done or whatever, unless the Rabbanu Shel Olam is there to help, so then what's it called? The Rabbanu Shel Olam will take to help you. Okay, any questions on this? Yes.
You gave us three ways to solve conflicts. One, change the situation. Two, change yourself. And three, remove yourself from the situation.
Right.
And they said, don't run away. So how do we distinguish the difference between number three, removing yourself from the situation, and what not to do, which is to run away?
Right. Running away means, okay, running away means I haven't analyzed the situation. I don't know what the problem is, if there's a way of changing it, if there's a way of changing me or not. Right, I just decided the easiest way, the path of least resistance, is get out of this, find some other situation. Okay, that's called running away. Right, the person has marital problems. They never made an attempt to analyze where the problems are coming from. Are you the cause? Is your spouse the cause? Is the living conditions that you're living under the cause? Right, make an attempt to change one of those things. No. It's just difficulty, I don't like difficulties, I'm going to try to find something easier. Running away means you don't consider bichlal, right, the problem, analyzing it or whatever. I'm just going to find an easier way to deal. I'll find another marriage, another job, another whatever it may be. When you analyze the situation and you've come to the conclusion that you're not going to change, the situation's not going to change, even though you've looked and investigated it thoroughly, so then the solution may be find another job, find another marriage, whatever. But that's a solution. That's not a cop out. Give me another example. Person wakes up in the morning and they're depressed. Right? They have a lot of problems, and they say, "You know what? I can't get out of bed. I'm just going to spend the rest of the day in bed. I just can't face the world." That's running away. Okay, that's definitely not positive. On the other hand, a person gets up in the morning and they say, you know what, I have so many problems that I have to face, right, and today I just can't do it. So if I stay in bed the rest of the day and rest a little bit, tomorrow I'll be able to perhaps face these problems with a lot more rest and well-being, and I'll be able to deal with them properly, right? The second way is a solution, even though you're doing the exact same thing of the first way, and the first way is running away. There's a big difference between your attitude in staying in bed because this is what I need today to be able to face the problems, or this is what I'm doing because I can't face the problems. Okay, same action, very different source and root. Okay, that's the difference.
Rabbi,
yeah.
You said that Yaakov didn't struggle with Satan.
And I didn't say he didn't. I said that there's different ways of understanding the same thing. Right? Rashi says that it was a satan. Gemara says that. But the Rashbam says the simple meaning of the sentence, it wasn't a satan. God sent an angel to make Yaakov confront Esau. But there's not really a contradiction. They can all be true. Because the Gemara says, there's a Medrash that says, that the angel that fought with Yaakov changed his appearance from time to time. Could be at some time through the night he was a satan. At some times he changed his appearance and he was the angel Michael. It wasn't the same angel all the time. He appeared to him as a Talmud Chacham. Then he appeared to him as a robber. In other words, basically what was happening here, Yaakov Avinu was going through that night all of the challenges that a person can have. Sometimes you fight against yourself, right? You're fighting what's your best interest. Sometimes you're fighting against an adversary. You're fighting against someone, some powers that are going against you. And Yaakov Avinu found in the satan all these different possibilities. So they all were true. Right?
And also, why is it that then, when he was victorious, was called Israel, not other name?
Because the name Israel shows that he was victorious. Sarisa, what does it mean? You fought with man and with angel, and you were successful. That's what Yisrael means. Yashar Keil, you're now straight with God. Yaakov means crooked. We start off in this world crooked, but if you work your way through the world properly, you end up straight, the way the Rebbe Shlomo made you intended you to be. But first you have to work out all the crookedness, right, that a person has, to be able to get to that being straight.
So Israel means
Yashar Keil, means being straight with God. It also means overcoming all of the obstacles that face a person. Yisrael, I fought with people and with angels. Eil over here means physical powers and spiritual powers, and I was successful. That's what this world is all about. From taking the, being the underdog, Yaakov, and confronting all of the difficulties of life, physical and spiritual, and coming out successful. But the way to do that is by being Yashar Kael, being straight with God, knowing that it's God who's the one who's going to make your efforts successful. Just, that adds to this very nicely. So we'll... Any other questions on this? Okay, if not, we have a minute. Let's see something else here. Yaakov Avinu tells Esav, "Im lovan garti, v'taryig mitzvah shomarti, v'lo lamadati mimaisav haroyim." I live with Lavan. I kept all Taryug mitzvahs, and I didn't learn from his evil ways.
But there wasn't
Taryug. Right. First of all, he couldn't have done all Taryug mitzvahs, because some mitzvahs only in Eretz Israel. He was in Chutz Lord. Secondly, he married two sisters. So how do you keep all Taryug mitzvahs?
One. He's on a show.
Right, but whatever. It was impossible. So one answer, I think, is it doesn't say Taryug mitzvahs kiyamti. Shomarti. The word shomarti means I guarded my environment, my values, my standards, such a way that whenever those mitzvahs would become effective, I'd be able to do them. If I didn't, if I was influenced by Lavan, then even when the mitzvahs became effective, I wouldn't do them because I wouldn't have the right outlook, right, the right standards, values, goals, or whatever. So Tari Mitzvah Shomarti doesn't mean I observe them. It means I guarded and waited anxiously, when will they come and I'll be able to do them, and I'll be able to do them because I guarded and protected and maintained my proper spiritual outlook. That's one thing. And Lola Mari, and he didn't learn from his evil ways. The Chafetz Chaim says that Yaakov Avinu was criticizing himself, and he said, with all the good things I did, I never did my good things with the same fervor and ardor that Lavan did his evil things. I didn't learn from him, right, how to really do things. He used to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to cheat people. I only got up at 5 o'clock to daven. I never really learned from him, right? Some, you can learn from everybody. Some people you learn what to do, and some people you learn what not to do. But some people you can learn from the way they do things wrong, how you can do things for the right. And Yaakov said, I really never learned from Lavan what I could have learned from him, how to apply his tremendous fervor to cheat to doing the proper things with the same fervor.